Okay, fantastic. Hey, if you got a Bible today, turn to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. It is so good to be back. And as I told the crowd last night, you're in trouble because I've had rest now. And this is an awesome chapter that we're going to be talking about today. So anyway, but I took some time. It was great to be back home a little bit. It's amazing because when you grew up where I grew up, you have this accent. And so if you hear it stronger today, it's because I've been around all those people. But it'll go back to normal if you'll give me some time. But anyway, Pastor, you have it. No, I don't have it if you hear the people where I'm from. And it's great to be back. And this chapter is a powerful chapter, not because I'm doing it, but because it is one of those great chapters to look at. Now, let me kind of catch you up with where we've been, and then you'll be able to jump into it. If this is your first Sunday, you've come on a great Sunday. Even though we've been in this series on Daniel for a while, it's kind of a breaking point between chapter 6 and 7. And the reason that we're in Daniel is because of what we're starting today. The reason that is because earlier this year, in January, we did this series on end times. And what the scripture, what the Bible has to say about things that are yet to come, the title of today is an overview of things to come, because chapter 7 gives you an overview of those things. And then the rest of the chapters, all the way through chapter 12 in Daniel, that gets a little more specific. So you're going to get an overview today, which is really pretty cool when you look at it. But as we were doing this series back in January, I kept referring back and forth to Daniel, and I thought to myself, and when we did that series on end times, we had a lot of great response. A lot of people were interested and excited about that series. And so we decided this summer to do this and to put it and to let you see Daniel, because Daniel's the linchpin. Daniel's the foundation. God revealed so much to Daniel, and you're going to see it today in this picture that really starts from Babylon and goes all the way to Antichrist here in chapter 7. So we're talking in this chapter 7, God kind of, he dumps all of this on Daniel and he records it. And you're gonna see it. It's pretty amazing when you take a look at it. So that's where we're going to be today. In fact, if you know of people that are on vacation or whatever today, and you may want to tell them, hey, you want to pick up today, because from here on, we're going to be referring back to today often. So the first six chapters of Daniel were biographical in nature. They had much more to do with Daniel's life and how his nation of Israel was conquered. And Nebuchadnezzar brought back exiles and then retrained them. And we talked about all that. And then Daniel kind of rose up the ranks in the nation of Babylon and the different things. And then this last time it talked about the handwriting on the wall when the Babylonian Empire was defeated and the Medes and the Persians took over. And so that's kind of where we left off, and that is really the end of the biographical part. So you have chapters 1 through 6 is biographical, and then chapter 7 through 12 is prophetic in nature, which you're going to see, it just totally changes today. So that's where we're going to be. That's where we're going to be today. That's really all of the context and the background that you need to know, other than what is said here in verse 1. Okay? And this tells you when this happened. And I don't want you to miss this, so you can put this together in your mind. It says in verse 1, it says, in the first year of Belshazzar, all right, king of Babylon. So I don't know, I find that fascinating. Because when you think about Belshazzar, he was the one that, he only ruled a few years before Babylon was defeated. We talked about him. Belshazzar was the one, right, with the handwriting on the wall where it switched over, you know, to Daniel then being under the Medes and the Persians. So this is the first year, and it was only a handful of years that Belshazzar was the king. So Daniel here is in his 80s. So we have a long time. Most of Daniel's life, he didn't have all these visions and dreams like he did toward the end of his life here. In fact, the previous time was, if you'll remember, We'll refer back to this a little bit today. You remember Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the great image with the head of gold, you know, and the breastplate of silver, and then it goes on down to the legs of iron, that image. Well, Daniel kind of was able to tell Nebuchadnezzar what that image meant, okay? But I want you to think about it. That's pretty much all since that time, from the time he was really, you know, 20 years old up to the handwriting on the wall in his 80s. And we're talking that most of his life, it wasn't like these type of visions happened to him all the time. At least we're not told that they were. So this is he's in his 80s here, and he gets this picture. So you're looking at Belshazzar, first year of Belshazzar, so you're looking kind of at the stage of what's happening. Now, that's where I want to jump right in. Let's jump right in. And if you'd like to take notes, as I put this together, I was thinking to myself, I don't want to make this so complicated because this is just an overview. But I want you to understand, we're just going to read down through the passage, and there could have been a whole lot of intricate outlines with Roman numeral 1, right, and then A, and then little 1, and we could have done it all that. But I'm just going to give you the overview of it. I'm just going to give you the major points of it, and then if you want to take extra notes down to put it in, you knock yourself out, because you'll see me talk down through it. So number 1, if you follow along, is the way this chapter starts out, is the vision, or a vision of 4 great beasts. Okay, now remember, these are symbolic in nature. They stand for something. So you have 3 different sections. You have a vision here of these beasts. You have a vision of God's throne. And then you have an interpretation at the very end. And so as we take a look at these in succession, remember that these things are futuristic, and this particular chapter 7 includes prophetic things that Daniel said that were going to happen and has happened since we have today. But it also includes things that still have not happened. It really is one of those fascinating prophetic type looks where it lists those things that were about to happen and did happen. And then it lists things that basically are parallel to the book of Revelation. You'll see it all in just a minute. So I'm gonna kind of fly through number 1 because I ran out of time last night. So I'm going to get through number 1. There's going to be some things. If some of you are students of Daniel, some of you are students of prophetic, you have to remember that I am not going into everything here. This is not a class. This is more of an overview of things of how they look. And some things surrounding it. But you can't go in depth, you know, or we'd be in Daniel a year and a half. All right, so we're just going to kind of give you that overall look. So number 1, then, is a vision of these 4 great beasts. Now, there's one thing you do need to know. You have these 4 beasts that come up out of the sea. We'll read about it in a minute. But you also have the 4 different sections. This is parallel to Nebuchadnezzar's dream that Daniel interpreted for him, you know, several decades before. Remember, you had the head of gold that represented Babylon, and then you had the breastplate that represented the Medes and Persians, and then you had, you know, the waist and the thighs represented Greece, and then the legs of iron that represented Rome. And so these 4 great powers. So this one is parallel. So let's go ahead and read about it, and then we'll share with you some things about kind of how these things are put together. Take a look at chapter 7 now in verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in his bed. And then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. So this obviously happened at night, and it was a dream-type thing. As I've told you before, you know, my dreams are so wild. I don't know about you, but I can't remember it half the time. But this is something that's different. Let's take a look at it in verse 2. It says this, Daniel declared, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the 4 winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. Now, I want you to understand here that the picture here, this great sea, is the Mediterranean Sea. Whenever it talks about the great sea, that is in the Bible, especially. That is what's being talked about. Is the great Mediterranean, this whole area, right? Now it says, I saw in the great sea, and it says there in verse 3, it says that 4 great beasts came up out of the sea. And here's the picture. They were different from one another. Now, four great beasts. So this is very symbolic, just like the book of Revelation is that we talked about in January. And they all mean something different. And then the description of these beasts all means different things. And now, I'm just going to just share with you the things that are fairly obvious. Now, I'm here to tell you, you have to be careful, okay, when you read people's interpretation. These guys who write these books, and I'm not against books. If you know me, you know I'm not against books. But they kind of go wild in their interpretation of every little thing. And so you have to be careful. Because when you look at this passage, just look at what it is saying and then what the obvious things are. And those are the ones we're going to talk about. Okay? And because there are lots of different things that people can go. And again, the things that we don't know are the things that we don't know. And guessing sometimes can be more dangerous than anything else. But let's just take a look at these four. Now, I'm going to go ahead and tell you up front. The first three were pretty ordinary, kind of, if you will, to Daniel. It's the fourth one that really we're going to take the time at the very end because that's the one that Daniel asks questions about. All right, so let's go through these quickly. And again, they represent these four beasts represent these great empires, just like this great image did. And you have these four empires. You have the Babylonians from history, the Medes and the Persians, you have the Greeks, and you have the Romans. You have these four beasts that come up out of the sea in what Jesus would term the times of the Gentiles. Therefore, the Jewish nation was defeated, and you have this time of the Gentiles before something else is going to happen. And it's all revealed to us today in this one chapter. Albeit there's going to be a lot more detail in the weeks to come. Now, let's take a look at these four different. Let's take a look at the first beast that comes up out of the sea. The stirring, or if you will, the storm that comes upon the water means that something major is about to happen. And then another beast emerges from the sea, or if you will, in the symbolism, another nation that is going to set up an empire emerges. Okay, on the scene in these countries around the Mediterranean Sea. Okay. Now, number one is this lion. Let's take a look at it, if you will, in chapter 7 and verse 4. And the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then I looked at its wings were plucked off. And it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it. Interesting. What is that? What is this lion with eagle's wings? Well, what is so fascinating about this? This is obviously the Babylonian Empire. And if you remember when we talked about Nebuchadnezzar, God had already said that it would be the greatest of the empires, Nebuchadnezzar's. Even though it didn't last very long, and even though it wasn't near as large as some of the others, it was to be the greatest. And if you were to go to the ruins of Babylon today and Nineveh, which are all close into that Babylonian era, you would see that the national symbol of the Babylonians is this lion with eagle's wings. It's an amazing thing when you look at this icon. It's kind of like the icon of our country is the bald eagle. Well, the icon of their country was this lion with these eagle's wings. And it was the most majestic of the beasts. In fact, these different beasts are symbolic for how these countries were. You'll see it in just a minute. But there was this regal, royal nature of the lion that symbolized Babylon. Very powerful, very swift, which represented the wings. And it is absolutely astounding what Nebuchadnezzar was able to do in just the brief 40 years that he had the kingdom. And how he was able to swiftly go through. But also, he was not so much a destroyer. He was definitely a conqueror. But I've told you before, he had a desire to create an empire of many nations. and not just have a bunch of conquered nations that were subservient to him, but he tried to incorporate them all. So there was a regal royal type feel to Babylon, okay? Even though it didn't last as long. So this was symbolized by this great lion with these wings that came up out of the sea. Number two is this bear. Let's take a look at it. It's interesting. And another beast, verse 5, and behold, another beast, a second one like a bear, it was raised up on one side, had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, arise, devour much flesh. So the second one's a bear. And this is the Medes and the Persians. And they were definitely not as majestic as the Babylonians. In fact, if you go back and you take a look at Cyrus and Xerxes and Artaxerxes and a lot of things that typified their kingdom, it was definitely not as royal. It was definitely not as regal. In fact, they were just powerful. When they would conquer these areas, you can read your history books. It's fascinating. I've had a great time looking at a lot of these things. But when you look at the Persian Empire, they just overwhelmed you with just brute strength and numbers. I mean, it was nothing for them to throw a million soldiers at you. And again, most of the time in their battles, you can read about it, most of the time in their battles, they had the greater casualties. But they had so many more soldiers than you had that they just overwhelmed you. And so they were just brute force strength, really no strategy. We're just gonna outstrength you, right? And that's exactly kind of who they were. You can read about them. And so this picture here of symbolizing them as the bear is pretty amazing. Again, you're looking at this saying, Jeff, how do you see all this? You'll see in just a minute when we get to the interpretation at the end, that's what these are all about, as it corresponds to the one before. So this is kind of the Persians. This is kind of who they are. And then the third, we can go a little quicker through this. And then the third, we have the leopard with its wings too. And so it's interesting. Let's take a look at it before I start talking about it. Look at verse 6. And after this I looked, and behold, another like a leopard had four wings of a bird on its back, and the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Now, what does that mean, wings and four heads? And all? Everything is symbolic here. And I want you to think, this is what makes this so fascinating to me. Therefore, when you think about Greece, if you know anything about Alexander, first of all, the leopard is not near as strong as the lion. But it is faster. And it's cunning. In fact, to even add to the swiftness of a leopard, it talks about wings being on the leopard. And if you know anything about world, if you don't, you'll have to. The great part about it, if you want to know, all you do is just make a couple of clicks and you're there. But if you know anything about Alexander, he was 33 when he died. He was some amazing kind of a guy. But speed was the key. I mean, I want you to know that Alexander conquered so much territory in such a short amount of time. I mean, he even went into India and conquered most of India as he went across all those lands, which again, we're not even really, we don't even really hear of them with the Babylonians and the Persians. And so, but speed was the key. In fact, when they defeated the Persians, like always, threw at them, you know, a gob of soldiers. And yet the strategy and speed of Alexander, they had much inferior as far as numbers, army. But the speed at which they attacked, they wiped out the Persians, even though they were hugely outnumbered. It's an amazing thing to look at. Now, what does it mean, four heads? What is this four-headed leopard? Jeff, what is all that? All right, you have to remember that the scriptures are symbolic, and just doesn't list them. You know, people ask me, why is it all symbolic? Why don't it just tell us? I've got several thoughts on that. Again, I don't know about them, and I'll share a couple of them with you. First of all, I think a lot of this is symbolic. so that it hides the truth from those who don't want to see. But it is revealed to those who do want to know and understand. Therefore, I've found that people that long to know who the Lord is, God's going to make sure you know and understand. Therefore, if you have a heartbeat to know and understand what I'm talking to you about today, you will. Maybe not all of it, because God reveals to those that He wants to reveal to. But a lot of the symbolism here is there so that your casual reader won't even understand what they're reading. But if you have ears to hear and eyes to see, God will make sure that those ears and eyes are open so you can understand. It's like the gospel of Christ and who Jesus is. I found those who truly want to know God know Him. In fact, I love the truth that says you know as much about God as you want to know. Right? You know as much about Him as you want to know. Because the Scripture says if you seek Him, you'll find Him. So therefore, someone who seeks God with their whole heart knows much more than the person that seeks very little. Does that make sense? I find it to be the same with prophecy. If you want to know, if you truly want to know, I'm here to tell you, it's there for you to understand. God will let you know. He'll open your eyes and let you see it. It's an amazing thing. So we have these four heads. They're symbolic. If any of you know anything about the Greek, is that Alexander died at a young age, 33, 34 years old. But he had four generals. And Alexander did not leave a will, and he did not leave what he wanted to happen to his kingdom. Who is going to be his successor? He didn't really have any children. In fact, most believe with some of the writings we have that he had one child on the way when he died. But that wasn't going. Who was going to pass on? So if you know anything about is that he had these four generals that they eventually divided up Alexander's kingdom, and it went to these four generals. The two of the most famous of those generals were Ptolemy and Seleucids. The Ptolemies and the Seleucids. You have these two others that were a little more minor. And so they got divided up. His kingdom got divided up into four. It's interesting. Four heads, right? On this leopard. You have this leopard that conquered everything, but then these four heads that came to it. And eventually it fell apart because with these different four factions and warring between them, mainly Rome came along. Now let's jump right on to the fourth one. Now, this fourth one, I'm not going to explain a whole lot more of it to you because a lot more explanation is found at the very end, and we'll wait till the end to take a look at it. But you have this fourth beast, and when it comes up out of the sea, it's different than the other three. The first three are recognizable. Okay, it's a lion. Well, it's got wings, which is a little weird, but it's a lion. And the second one's a bear. Okay? And the symbolism of the ribs, we just don't have time to talk about. But again, the bear gets them. It's a bear. All right. The third is the leopard. Okay, it's a little weird. It's got a couple extra heads, but it's a leopard. Okay? But this one, this is interesting. This last one terrified Daniel in his dream. Terrified him. And let's see why. Take a look at it, if you will, with me in verse 7. Verse 7 says this. And after this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast. Look at this. Terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. Right? Exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. So this is a monster. This is not something that is a natural. He can't even describe it. He can't even put it to what is the symbolism. A leopard, a bear, a lion. No, this is just a beast. And first, I mean, it's exceedingly strong. It's terrifying. It's stuff of nightmares kind of thing. And so he goes on to tell you a little bit more about it. Let's continue to read. It had great iron teeth. Now look at this. It devoured and broke in pieces and then stamped what was left with its feet. So what's this picture? That means it, first of all, it came and it broke everything into pieces. And then after it broke everything into pieces, it stamped on what was the pieces that were left until they were just ground into powder. So in other words, it just annihilated everything before it. Interesting. Continue to read. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. There was something that stuck out with this fourth one. Hey, continue to read. And it had 10 horns. Now, a horn was always symbolic in the book of Revelation and even really in the Bible as a king or a kingdom. And you'll see that that is the case here because later on, at the very end, this interpretation really is about this fourth beast. The other three, Daniel didn't have a whole lot of questions about, but this fourth one it did. But you have these 10 horns, and we'll talk about them in just a minute because it's all symbolic. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn. Look at this. A little one. Now, if you like writing in your Bible, this is classic. This is amazing. This little horn that arises. Not little in the fact that it, you'll find out later that it is superior to all the others. But there's this other horn that's different. Now, you're going to find out later in the interpretation that this little horn is a picture of the Antichrist that is mentioned and revealed as the beast in the book of Revelation. So when you begin to put these together, you begin to see the correlation between Daniel's writing and then John in the book of Revelation. And you'll see the rise of this Antichrist, if you will. It'll all come together, and I've got to move on because this is at the very end of this passage where this is explained. You'll see it, and you'll see it clearly. Let's continue to read. Before which three of the first horns were plucked up by the roots. So this little horn is going to arise and is going to pluck up by the roots three of these other horns, of which there were 10. Again, at the end, it'll tell us. Let's continue to read. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. Okay? Again, that says at the very end. Now, number one then is that the four great beasts from the sea. And we've talked about the first three. The fourth one we'll save till the very end. Number two, there's kind of an interlude here. And this interlude is what I'm going to call a vision of God's throne. I can't tell you how fascinating. And if you've got ears to hear, this is really going to stir up something inside when you begin to see how things fit together with Jesus' time and some of the things that Jesus did. Now, remember, the book of Daniel is an old book. It was written in the 500s B.C., so in the 6th century B.C. And so we're talking, this was all written some 520 years before Jesus was ever even born. In fact, when Daniel told these four great beasts, he had already seen, because this happened in the first year of Belshazzar, so he'd already seen the Babylonian beast, but it was going to only be a few years before the next beast came out of the sea, which is the Medes and the Persians. But then he listed the next two, obviously, long after he had already died. So you see this prophecy kind of, some of it, half of it's already been fulfilled since he made it. And then there's another big chunk of it that's coming, which you'll see in just a minute. So we have this vision of this of God's throne. And let's just take a look at it, because there's some symbolic language here that's pretty fun to think about. Look at verse 9. As I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. If you ever wonder where some of our musicians who come up with these praise choruses and songs that mention the Ancient of Days, this is where they get it from. Also, Jesus is referred to this in the New Testament. But in this particular case, you're going to find out here that this is a definite picture of God's throne, God the Father. And you're also going to see kind of a relationship between God the Father, God the Son. How does that look? What is that? That's confusing. That's confusing to everybody who truly wants to know and look at it. Because I think it goes beyond our ability to comprehend. You'll see in just a minute. But you have this picture of this throne. You have this picture of the Ancient of Days on this throne. It even describes symbolically what the Ancient of Days looks like. This is really interesting. Let's take a look at it. It says here, his clothing was white as snow. That has to do with purity. His hair was like pure wool. That has to do with wisdom. And his throne was fiery flames, and its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him, and 1,000 thousands served him, that is millions, you know, and then 10,000 times 10,000, that is hundreds of millions, stood before him. And this was a court that sat in judgment, and the books were opened. Now, again, there's a lot of symbolic language here. Jeff, what do you think all that means? Let me give you a few things that I know that it means. A couple of things when you think about a throne, you have no comprehension. I have no comprehension of a throne because you and I do not live in a monarchy. We don't live in the times of kings who have ultimate authority, who have absolute authority in their kingdom. It was a terrifying thing to stand before a throne because the person sitting on the throne has absolute authority over you. See, you don't have any idea. You don't have any idea because we don't live like that. We don't have a king that if he looks at you and says, okay, you're dead, you're dead. We have a president that we elect. We have legislators that we elect and that make our laws. And if we don't like what they're doing, then we vote them out. Okay? And so we have this representative type government. You have no idea of the incredible authority and power that sits on a throne. Because monarchy has basically gone out of existence in our world. Not totally, but almost. So you have this picture then of these four great kingdoms that have come out of the sea. But just so you don't think things have got out of control, there is still one who sits on a throne who has absolute authority over it all. That's the picture. You have the purity of his judgments. You have the purity of his wisdom. And then what does the fire represent? Represents justice, judgment. Which just makes it what it is. It's what it is. Fire is always a picture of judgment in the scriptures. So therefore, you have one who sits on the throne who makes absolute decisions. And you're going to find out in a minute, and I'll share with you in just a minute. You're going to find out in a minute, that is what our world, especially our country, is working real hard against. Those of you that have been in college or are in college now in the last 20 years, you're being told is that there is no such thing as absolute truth. That's what you're being taught and told. And you want to know why? Because there is only one who has absolute truth, and he's the one that's sitting on the throne here. Therefore, to deny absolute truth is to deny God's existence. If you're hearing, for those of you who have ears to hear. And to deny that the one who sits on this throne has absolute authority in your life. He does, whether you believe it or not. But what's being taught today in our country is that we'll just change any law we want to. We'll do anything we want to do. Why? Because we're God. So as you understand this picture of this throne, it is a powerful thing when you think about God's throne, when you think about where judgments and justices are passed out, when you talk about the books being opened. How cool would it be to be in a court, okay, where you had perfect evidence? That's what the picture of the books. What are in books? Information are in books. What are in books in a courtroom? Well, laws are written, but also evidence is there. Therefore, these particular books are those that have absolute truth, absolute knowledge, and perfect wisdom that goes with it. So that's what's represented in this court. So no matter how bad it gets, I believe that's why there's this interlude between these visions and between the interpretation of them, which is found at the end. You have this vision of the throne and the Ancient of Days that sits on the throne. Pretty neat vision when you take a look at it. All right, let's take a look at the rest of this piece. All right, I looked because the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed. Now, the horn was speaking. Remember, we just talked about the little horn that was speaking great things. And I want you to know that the picture here is that as I looked, the beast was killed and its body was destroyed and it was given over to be burned with fire. Okay, so you have this beast, the beast of Revelation, that actually is talked about that is thrown into the lake of fire in the book of Revelation. This is the same correlation. It says a little bit more about it in a minute. All right, continue to read. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. That is the three others. That means that they were not absolutely destroyed. They just had their power taken away, like Greece today. God bless them. Somebody needs to bail them out, right? Okay, some of you must say you don't know what I'm talking about. They're about to go bankrupt. All right? They're definitely not the power that they were back in the time of Alexander, is the picture here. So their lives are prolonged. It's just they're not in charge anymore. Okay. Let's continue to read. Now, this one is amazing. This is what I was talking to you about. Let's think about this. Look at this. And I saw in the night visions, and behold, if you like writing your Bible, with the clouds of heaven there came one like a son of man. Underline the phrase, in the clouds, underline the phrase, son of man. All right, continue to read. And he came to the Ancient of Days. So you have this son of man who came and presented himself to the Ancient of Days. You got this picture in this throne room. For those of you who have a vivid imagination, you can really put this to work. And he stands before the Ancient of Days. Let's continue to read. And was presented before him, and to him, that is the Son of Man, was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, and that all peoples, nations, languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. Underline that word. It's an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and it's one that shall not be destroyed. So these other four are going to come and go, come and go, come and go. But there's one coming who has the ability to stand before the Ancient of Days, and that the Ancient of Days will commit to him. Interesting. Son of Man. Now, I just don't have time. We just run out of time. Listen faster, please. I got a lot more to tell you. All right. Now, do you know what Jesus' favorite term for himself was? The Son of Man. I always thought that curious, didn't you? I'm a son of a man. All right? What is he talking about? He's the Son of God. That's really what he is. Why did he always refer himself as the Son of Man? Well, you have to take a look here at Daniel's prophecy. The Son of Man was presented and was given dominion. You take a look at the book of Revelation. When Jesus' second coming, he establishes a kingdom, this Son of Man, that will last forever lasting. It's 1,000 years, but then even after that, it goes on. And it is established. Okay? Now, don't miss this. Don't miss this. So the Son of Man is coming to establish a kingdom. Here we go. So he's come. When Jesus was with his disciples, you remember when he took some time and he brought the 12 disciples and they went up to Caesarea Philippi. And that is, they got out of Israel for a little while because the crowds were pressing in on Jesus. And he got up and he got these guys around, his 12 disciples, and he looks at them and he says, and do you remember what he says? In Matthew 16, I believe it is. He says, who do people say that I, the Son of Man, is? Right? Or are? You get the point. All right, here we go. And he said, he referred to himself as the Son of Man in direct correlation to this chapter 7 and what and who he's supposed to be. And do you remember what Peter said? You know, then they said, who does people, and they said, well, some say you're Elijah, some say you're John the Baptist, some say you're one of the other prophets. But who do you say that I am? And Peter spoke up and said, you're the Christ. You're the Son of the living God. And then Jesus looked back at him and said, wow, Peter, you got it. You've made the connection. And I want you to know, Peter, don't pat yourself on the back because only God could have shown you that. All right? Now, here's something else for you to just log into your brain as you read the New Testament. You ever wondered why? I mean, the disciples never really got who Jesus was. Well, they got it, but they definitely didn't get what he'd come to do. All of the disciples, what did they think Jesus was going to do? Set up a kingdom. Why? Because that's what Daniel said he was going to do. Set up a kingdom that's going to last forever. And so they just could not understand that when Jesus was betrayed, arrested, and crucified, they're like, well, wait a minute, maybe he wasn't the one, because the Bible says he's going to set up a kingdom that will be an everlasting dominion, and the Romans just killed him. You see, remember when they were jockeying for position? Even James and John's mother came to Jesus and said, when you set up your kingdom, I want my two sons to be at your right hand and your left. Right? Remember when she said that? Well, what are they thinking about? They're thinking about this kingdom in here in Daniel. Why? Because they all knew this chapter. This chapter is pivotal in understanding the rest of the book of Daniel. And to be honest with you, without this chapter and then chapter 9 also, we wouldn't even understand what the book of Revelation tells us. So, we got one more thing to tell you, all right. So this Son of Man, another thing too, just to tell you real quick. It's also been very curious because for our Jewish friends, they have always looked at chapter 7 and this description of this Son of Man to be messianic in nature. That is, the Messiah, the Christ who was to come. This has always been a messianic chapter. And therefore, anyone who would call themselves the Son of Man, anyone who would refer to himself or be called the Ancient of Days, anyone who would allow himself to be called the I Am, therefore is understanding who Jesus is. He is the Son of God and the Son of Man. Therefore, he is God who's become flesh and dwelt among us. Therefore, it is who Jesus is that allowed him to do what he came to do. I talk about that all the time, every chance I get. And that is what's being thought here. Now, number three, we've got to get there. Number three is the interpretation. So Daniel had a problem. He didn't understand. This makes me feel so much better. He didn't understand what he saw. And so he began to ask questions. And I'm glad he did, because we learn a whole lot more about what's just happened here by Daniel's questions. Let's take a look at them. All right, here we go. In same chapter, look at verse 15. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, I bet. And the visions of my head alarmed me. Don't you imagine? All right, continue to read. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the things. These four great beasts are four kings or four kingdoms. So that's why I was telling you earlier, because the interpretation later tells you these beasts represent kingdoms that come up out of the sea. Okay, is the picture. Are four kings who shall arise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. It's an interesting phrase. So we have this bit. Who are the saints that are being talked about? That is not us. Obviously, this is before Christ was born, 500 years. We're talking about the Jewish people here. We'll talk about this in weeks to come. Because if you noticed, and I've noticed, in this prophecy and in the prophecies of Revelation, the church is never really mentioned as being part of all that's going to be happening here. And so, and we'll develop this in later weeks. This is just things that are coming, okay? I'll just put coming soon over that. Okay, let's continue to read. Then I desired to know the truth about the fourth beast. In other words, Daniel's like, you know, I get those first three, okay, they make sense, but that fourth one, I just don't understand. Here we go, continue to read. Which it was different from all the rest, exceedingly terrifying. And the teeth of iron, and he even adds a couple other things, claws of bronze, and which devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet. And about the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn that came up, and before which three of them fell, and the horn that had the eyes and mouth that spoke great things. And look at this. And it seemed greater than its companions. So that little horn is greater than all the other horns, is the picture here. And it goes on to explain, continue to read. And as I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them. You can read about that again in Revelation. So there's going to be a great battle of which the saints here will be overcome. That is, God's people will be overcome by this little horn, by this Antichrist that's actually named the beast in the book of Revelation. Right? Until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. So let's take a look at the interpretation here. Look at verse 23. Thus he said, as for the fourth beast, there shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the other kingdoms. It shall devour the whole earth and trample it down and break it to pieces. Okay? Verse 23 is Rome. If you know anything about the Roman Empire, that is a great description of the Roman Empire. They just basically devoured everything, and anything that was left after they broke it, they trampled it into dust. It is who they were. Now, that's Rome, but look at verse 24. This will help you. As for the ten horns, out of this kingdom, so out of Rome, there's going to be ten kingdoms that come, or ten kings. So then a while after Rome is done, there are going to be these nations that form around the Roman Empire. And it is of those ten that this ruler is going to come up. And out of those ten, he's going to conquer three. Or as it says here, I believe, subdue three of those ten. All right? Now let's continue to read. We're just about done. Take a look at it. And as for the ten horns, out of this kingdom, ten kings shall rise. Another one will rise after them, and he'll be different from the former ones, and he should put down three kings, or three kingdoms. And he shall speak words against the Most High. This is the Antichrist. This is the one that's talked about. This is one that makes great boastings and great blasphemies from the book of Revelation. Continue to read. And he will wear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change the times and the law. So therefore, he will be one that will want to change law and time. Why? Because that's what God does. That's what I believe is happening today. This whole picture where man is stepping into the place. Because it's making way for one to come with great leadership skills who will have no problem being able to introduce laws and times that go against there even being a concept of who God is. Okay? And I believe it to be the time in which we live. All right, continue to read. And they shall be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. Okay? Time is 1 year. Times is 2 years and a half a time. 3.5 years. It's the picture that you'll see again in a couple of weeks with the 70 weeks. And you have the 7 years. And then the half of 7 years is 3.5 years. And you'll see how all that works. But I think it's interesting that it is put that way. And you'll see it later. Okay? But the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away and to be consumed and destroyed to the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. And his kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom. And it says the same thing, his dominion shall serve and obey him. Here's the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me. I bet. And my color changed. I bet. But I keep the matter in my heart. And that's how he ends it. Now, a couple things I want to tell you about. It won't take long. But what causes this to go? And this is why people talk about, what is the Roman Empire? Well, you can go back and look. And you can go back and look at the old Roman Empire, especially those nations that surrounded the Mediterranean Sea. There's going to be a ruler that come out. This is the introduction of the Antichrist is here, which is more told about, and we'll talk more about it in the book of Revelation. This is why people thought Hitler was him. Because his Germania was one of Rome's greatest rivals and had some of the fiercest battles. Therefore, the Germans, when they came to power, and they began to subdue nations around them, right? And they hated the Jews. This is the same. This is why. And I can understand why people at the time thought Hitler was him. because you can see it all lining up. But that's what the picture looks like. But I will tell you this. And again, I've got to be done. But this is, I've tried to make this an overview. The next weeks that are to come, we'll just go into detail of what we've talked about today. But as we talk, as we think about these things, notice that things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. But let me tell you this, as a believer here today, don't let that alarm you. Don't let that scare you. You don't have to be in fear, but I will tell you this. It's already here, pretty much worldwide, that there is no respect for who God is or His law or His creation. Let's be honest. So we know where it's going. But you know, it's like two nights ago, I got home in from out of town. And Martha and I turned on the television. And I had to check the news. So I went to ESPN. And they were showing a replay. I don't know if any of you saw it, Friday night. They were showing a replay of the national championship football game for college in 1999, which is the year Tennessee played. I'm like, yes! Okay, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a Tennessee fan. And so we haven't been very good lately, but there was a time when we were good, and 99 was it. And I sat and watched this replay of this football game from 99. I think it was on the SEC network. All right. And so I was watching this game, and it was a tough game. All right. Tennessee, actually, that's when they won the national championship. And I was watching it, but, you know, I wasn't nervous. I remember when I watched it in 99, I was screaming at the television. I was dying. My gut was dying because, you know, Florida State came back and it was close at the end. But I wasn't nervous at all watching it this time. Look at me. Why? Because I already knew we'd won. For those of you who have ears to hear. I don't have to be nervous if I already know the outcome. So, Jeff, what are we supposed to do till then? Hey, this is how I'm going to close. You don't have to look at this. Just look at the screens. And I want you to hear my heart here. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, it mentions this time. And this is how I'm going to end. Let's take a look at it. Let us consider how to stir up one another, that is, fellow believers, to love and good works. In other words, we should learn how to motivate one another towards loving one another and towards doing good things. Not neglecting to meeting together. That's what this is today, by the way. Us getting together as God's people, as believers. Let us not neglect meet together as the habit of some. We have a lot of people that will come up with every excuse in the book just not to be here. Isn't it interesting? It's all talked about right here. Here we go. Not neglecting to meet together, as the habit of some is, but encourage one another. Look at this. Look at this. All the more as you see what approaching? The day. What's just been talked about. So as the day gets closer, that big day we're talking about, we're going to need each other. If that makes sense. We need to stop bickering over things that don't matter. Because there are a lot more serious things that are coming down the road that we're going to need each other. Therefore, do not neglect meeting together. Do not neglect God's family all the more as you see the day approaching. All right? All right, God bless you. Let's all stand. We'll have a closing word of prayer. Tim, won't you come on out? Hey, it's good to have you today. We're going to continue this on. Again, I know, I felt like I was giving you a drink from a fire hydrant today. And because there's a lot of information here, but we had to get this down because the rest of it is really going to fall into line. Hey, if there's never been a time in your life you put your faith and trust in Christ, you'd like to know more about what that means, there'll be some pastors afterwards. But God bless you guys. Have a wonderful wet rest of your day. And I love you guys. Y'all have a good day.